This episode of Warp 5 is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform for creating a blog, website, portfolio, or an online store. To create your own space, visit squarespace.com and save 10% by using offer code TREK7. And by TrekFan. It's not just a fan club, it's an adventure. You'll explore new places, learn new things, and collaborate with other fans to solve puzzles, complete real-life mission objectives, and win great prizes. Don't miss out. Help us move toward that Star Trek future by visiting TrekFan.org. Plus, if you'd like to support our programming personally, visit Trek.fm/donate to get our new alien badges featuring original illustration by Tobu Ushi.
Hi, I'm Anthony Montgomery, Ensign Travis Mayweather on Star Trek Enterprise, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Trip.
Ready when you are.
Prepare for warp.
Course laid in, sir. Request permission to get underway.
Let's go.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Warp 5, our dedicated Star Trek Enterprise podcast. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me again this week is my lovely co-host from Down Under. It's Kate Walsh. Hey, Kate, how are you doing this week?
Not bad, thanks, Chris. And you? Or should I say sweetie?
No, I'm Chrisillic tonight.
Oh, okay. Got your Enterprise hat on.
Now, Kate, I have to ask you a question. Now, you're looking a little bit yellowish tonight, and when I walked in, you were climbing on the ceiling. Now, what is going on?
Well, you know, in Australia, everything's upside down, so we don't walk around on the floors, you know. We've got a lot of beaches happening here too, so that might have explained my kind of sandy complexion as well as, you know, me walking around on the ceiling.
Okay, well, that makes more sense. You know, for a minute there, I was a little bit worried that you might be a Suliban.
No, all is well.
Okay, that's good to hear. Well, you know, last week we talked about Captain Archer, and this week we're going to talk about one of the first thorns in his side, and that's, of course, Silic and the Suliban.
That's right.
So, Kate, the Suliban were very... I remember when Enterprise premiered, and I thought the Suliban are an interesting-looking race. They're a little bit different, a little bit more creative alien-wise, I guess, than some of the things that we had seen on Star Trek, at least in recent years leading up to Broken Bow. What did you think about these yellow, pockmarked, sandy-faced aliens?
I thought visually they were awesome. You know, I just love that sandy complexion. The makeup was just so creative. And, you know, the other thing that was so striking about them was in that pilot in particular, there were a lot of really good special effects used in relation to the Suliban storyline.
Oh, definitely.
And that was, you know, it had this real big budget feel about it, that pilot. So... I associate those effects with the Suliban as well.
It's a good point about Broken Bow. People ask me, you know, what is the best premiere episode of any Star Trek series? And I tell people, in terms of production, I think Broken Bow is the best pilot. And people look at me like I'm crazy. Like, Enterprise? Really? Like, yeah, you know, I mean, in terms of a story, I think Emissary is the best pilot. But in terms of overall production, Broken Bow.
Absolutely. Even the scene that stands out to me more than anything is that the opening scene in the cornfield, and it just looks spectacular. But going back to the Suliban's physical appearance, the thing I really appreciated about the Suliban is that a lot of the species that we see in Star Trek, you know, like we've got the Klingons with the forehead ridges or someone with a nose or an ear that's shaped a bit differently. And this kind of, it's used, it's, prosthetics are used and much more so. But the thing with the Sulaban is it was actually the tone of the skin. It was a new take, something I hadn't really seen a lot in other series, a different way to make them humanoid but to stand out.
And not just the tone, but the texture as well. Like, you really felt that these were aliens, not just bumps on the nose.
Well, that's right. And the other thing with the Sulaban is that they were actually, they did have quite a different feel about their movement as well, which also comes down to the effects, mm-hmm. as I've said. It felt very unique. And for that premiere, it really set Enterprise apart from other series. It made me think, wow, we're getting something really new here.
Maybe they were all double jointed. Everyone on the planet is double jointed,
or even zero jointed. By the way, they were sliding under those doors.
Zero jointed. Oh, that's true. Yeah, that's true. Of course, that's something we'll get into in a moment, because not all Sulaban could slide under doors. There was something a little bit special about those Sulaban who could slide under doors.
There was, and I personally have mixed feelings about that aspect of the show. We learned about the Sulaban cabal through Enterprise and in that pilot, which were a very specific group of Sulaban who were involved in what we later learned to be the Temporal Cold War. But in learning about them and their storyline, we weren't really learning about the Sulaban as a race, and that's the only one of the main regrets I have about the way the Sulaban storylines were treated in Enterprise.
Yeah, that's a good point. So we'll come around to that as we talk today, but let's start out with just the reason that the Sulaban were introduced to the show in the first place. And there are really two angles to this. There's, of course, the angle that Brannon has talked about before in interviews, and he even mentions it on the Blu-rays, about how the studio wanted to have a futuristic element to the show, and therefore the Temporal Cold War came into play, and then the Sulaban are central to the whole Temporal Cold War concept, because they are, you know, basically mm-hmm. the agents that are being used in the Temporal Cold War. I love Brandon's response to that, which is that I think, you know, a show set in the 22nd century is pretty futuristic already. So, and I agree with him on that.
That's a good point. Although, of course, he wanted to, originally, that he and Rick wanted it to be more of an Earthbound show, at least in the first season. And were then kind of forced to take it into the, more into space. And as you've said, the studio were really looking for something even further beyond the 24th century, which is the storyline that the Temporal Cold War introduced us to. The Sulaban were the key agents in that. They were not directly a futuristic enemy, but agents of that futuristic enemy.
Exactly, yeah. So there's that, and then there's the idea of just kind of making the show a little bit scarier, or maybe not scary in the sense of you're going to scream and you're going to be frightened, but just kind of this kind of eerie or creepy feeling. Like, there's just something creepy going on with this guy Silic and this woman Saren and these Sulaban characters.
I certainly think of the show that was fairly successful. And when I spoke about this species being quite different to anything I'd seen in Star Trek, I think that was a part of it. It had particularly the scenes where they're sliding under the doors or they're climbing on the ceilings. It had a much more menacing feel to it than really any of the aliens I'd seen before in Star Trek. The Borg were fairly scary. They used to terrify me when I was younger, but I hadn't seen a lot since then that would really equal the feel of the Sulaban. I am in thinking about this over the last couple of days, because we know, of course, from interviews that we've seen and read before with Brandon in particular, that he's quite a horror fan. You know, he is a fan of Stephen King and has, right. even has written horror himself in his earlier careers. And so I think, you know, this is, I couldn't really see his influence in trying to bring that kind of edgier, and not so much dark and gritty, right. but just a slight element of horror into Enterprise.
Because you mentioned the Borg, and the Borg are scary because you can't stop them. But the Borg are not going to sneak up on you.
No.
You know, the Borg, you know where they are, and they're going to just keep walking towards you, and you can't stop them, and they're going to come and assimilate you. Whereas the Sulaband, you don't know where they are. It's like something lurking in the shadows. Something, they could be behind you. They could be over your head. You don't know where they are, and that's a very creepy factor.
Well, the scenes where they're on the ceiling actually remind me very much of some of the scenes that we see in the Alien movies, where they can really contort, and because of the skin color, they can hide, and they're super predators. And it had very much had that feel to me. And as you say, because you don't know where they are, you don't know who they are. It's a little bit like, as a Deep Space Nine fan, you might be able to comment the way that the shapeshifters are portrayed.
A little bit, yeah. But the shapeshifters come in and the changelings come in and you don't know who they are. You know, they replace, even some key major characters are replaced by changelings for lengthy periods on the show. And so a little bit like that, you know, you're unsure. But this is more just kind of like the Sulaband for me are more like these just, it's like ghosts in the closet, like when you're a kid, or ghosts under the bed. You don't know. You just...
yeah.
You're always worried that there's something out there. So it has that kind of feel. Now, the Sulaband were, you know, every show has its enemy. Of course, when we think of the original series, we think of the Klingons as being the enemy, although the Klingons only appeared in 7 episodes of TOS. They're not really there as much as people remember them being. And in some of those cases, it was just like they were there, but they weren't central to the story. Then in TNG, you have the Borg, although the Ferengi were originally introduced to be the super enemy for the Next Generation, but that didn't quite work out thanks to whips and fur and jumping around like monkeys in the last outpost. DS9, of course, has the Dominion and the Jem'Hadar. Voyager has the Borg in the later seasons, but we could also look at a few other races like the Hirogen. For example, of course, we have the Kazon, which were kind of lame early on, but the Kazon were originally the big enemy. And in Enterprise, we have the Sulaband. How do you feel the Sulaband lived up to their position of being that villain in Enterprise? You know, did they fulfill the role that they were intended to fulfill? How did it work for
them? In my opinion, no, they did not. I think early on, as you know, at the pilot and probably maybe the first half of season one, they were clearly the main enemy. But as the show focused on, you know, going out in space and you know, the challenges of that, it felt like much more energy was going into that aspect of the show than, you know, creating this. A significant backstory for this super enemy. They felt a little wishy-washy and the storyline's a little underdeveloped for me on that side. And I really appreciate the first season. I love it. It's, you know, probably my favourite of all of the Enterprise seasons, but not because of the Sulaband. They, as I reflect back on that first season in particular, they don't feel like a large part of it to me. When I think of a super enemy in Enterprise, I think of the Zindi and the third season story arc.
Yeah, when you get to the end of the series and you look back, definitely the Zindi would be the super enemy for Enterprise. But do you feel like the Sulaband detract from the overall storytelling, the overall theme of Enterprise in the first season, the second season?
I would say that, and you know, just my opinion is that the lack of follow through with the Sulaban seems to weaken the show just a little for me.
That's kind of the thing, I guess, right? Yeah, lack of follow through. It's, I think there was something there that could be very interesting. I'm not sure that I can really position them as the super enemy, though, because they were doing what they were doing largely to get their rewards from Future Guy in the 28th century.
Yes.
More so than, they didn't personally have it out for humans or Earth or Archer. And there's some intrigue there that I think could have been capitalized upon that wasn't. Especially when you get to like that scene on Ryza in 2 Days and Two Nights where Archer, you know, he has this woman, he has this love interest going on. And of course, she turns out to be a Sulaban, right? And that was kind of interesting. It had me kind of intrigued, but still yet it felt like it didn't quite go anywhere.
Yeah. That storyline, that part of that storyline certainly got into some of that fear and doubt that we could have. And I think it would have played in very well with the uncertainty of going out in space for the first time, that we've also got this uncertainty around, you know, can we trust these people we're really dealing with? Do we even believe their identity? And so I think that could have worked really well. But at that stage, it felt, it was, as we've said, it didn't feel to me like it was really followed through with and made into something more substantial. And I wonder if a part of that is that the show wasn't really looking at a race. They were looking at a subset of a race.
Right. It could be. Or it could be just that this element of the show wasn't really part of the original design of the show. You know, it was kind of wedged in there to meet the studio's desires for that futuristic element. So there's a little bit of a tug of war in storytelling. You know, if you look at episodes like Strange New World or Shuttlepod 1, these types of episodes where they're really exploring, or even Terra Nova, you know, it's where they're seeing other worlds for the very first time. I feel that's more the idea of the show, whereas the temporal Cold War, the Sulaban element, feels more like traditional Star Trek.
Yes.
In the sense of a storyline we might have in any of the other Star Trek series. And so there feels like, to me, a little bit of a creative tug of war going on here. And maybe...
And that maybe the hearts of the writers weren't really in that storyline.
Right, exactly. Like the original concept of the show was winning out a bit more over this. And so this was here, but it was underdeveloped. And it left you just kind of wondering, like, if it's going to be in the show, you want it to have more follow through, to grab you and pull you along through the storyline a little bit more. Because otherwise you feel like it's just taking up time from... Yeah. The parts of the show that you really want to be seeing.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. And when we look at the Zindi storyline, I mean, that really was a very deliberate thing. Their hearts had gone into it, and that's reflected in the status of that enemy and what we feel is at stake in fighting that enemy.
Now, the Sulaban themselves, the backstory, which you have to kind of piece together from things that are said in different episodes, is that their planet became uninhabitable in what would be on our calendar here on Earth around the 1850s. So that means for about 300 years, this race has been roaming and been nomadic because their homeworld had been rendered uninhabitable. And so then in 2151, so it really is 300 years later, they have their first contact with humans because of the fact that Klang ends up on Earth. And the Sulaban are trying to start this Klingon Civil War. And so that's how they end up encountering humans and trying to disrupt, you know, Archer taking Klang back to Kronos. So it's kind of interesting. And they're a race that was pretty much like humans. They weren't really more evolved than humans, but they were getting this ability, this technology to genetically enhance themselves from some guy who we all call Future Guy in the 28th century as a reward for helping him manipulate historical events as part of the temporal Cold War. And so that leads us to the question, really, of whether or not the Suliban are terrorists or if they're pawns being manipulated by Future Guy. And it's very interesting to me that before the 9/11 attacks on the United States, Rick Berman actually chose the name Suliban based on the Taliban.
Yes.
So Suliban, Taliban, and mostly because he said it was just kind of, it was an unusual or exotic name for him. And he had spent time in Afghanistan shooting documentaries, and it just seemed like a dramatic name. Of course, it turns out to have been quite accurate for the way that the Suliban cabal are portrayed on the show and what the Taliban have done over the years since Enterprise aired and went off the air.
And also, given the themes that were explored through Enterprise, where, you know, where it really did look at terrorist themes through that third season storyline. And it's quite ironic that there was that link, you know, in choosing the Suliban name based on the Taliban, quite prophetic in some ways.
It was, yeah. Well, what do you think? Do you feel like they were terrorists, or were they just pawns for Future Guy?
Maybe this is partly why I don't really buy the super enemy thing, and not to make excuses for the Suliban, but if we think of their backstory, this is a displaced people. We don't know the entire motives of why they were looking for these genetic enhancements other than to speed up their evolutionary process, but I couldn't help but think of them as a vulnerable group that are taking extreme measures and what I would consider immoral measures to advance themselves. And that might mean that they are an immoral group of people, but I don't know that I would go so far as to call them terrorists in and of themselves. I felt like they were being quite manipulated and a lot of the time quite ignorant of what the consequences were going to be of their actions.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I think for me to classify them as terrorists, I feel like they have to have a motive themselves beyond trying to enhance themselves or, you know, to speed up their evolutionary process or what have you. And although you could look at things like attacking Klingon outposts in an effort to ignite a Klingon civil war, you could certainly look at that and say, well, those are acts of terrorism. They were doing them on behalf of Future Guy. Mm. I wish he had a better name. You know, we don't really know. Although, you know, we've been told now that in season 5, we were going to find out that Future Guy was actually Archer, who was trying to right some wrongs by manipulating history. But again, that comes from Manny Koto's magic bag of hindsight, as we refer to it on the Ready Room. All the things that have been revealed that we would have found out about various characters or plot lines in the 5th season, particularly the one about where Porthos was actually a cat. That was, I don't know where they were going with that, but T'Pol was half Romulan. That's a real one.
And Malcolm Reed actually was a ladies' man.
And Travis actually had all the lines, and they had to rewrite them so other characters had something to do. But no, here, so the Suliban, they're doing these things because they're being directed by Future Guy to do them. And so to me, that really makes them pawns and not terrorists. I think they are pawns in this temporal Cold War. future guy and whoever else is involved in manipulating them has identified a vulnerable race, as you described them, and realized that they can manipulate these people. And that's what they're doing.
Because the Suliban didn't have their own direct agenda against humans or Klingons, which is what you're saying, I think. Yeah, they had their agenda was quite separate from that. And yeah, I think you're spot on. They were being manipulated by people with technology and power and knowledge far beyond theirs to give them, you know, to satisfy the needs and vulnerabilities of this Suliban cabal group.
And it's very tempting for them too, because I made a list of things that they got in exchange for helping. In terms of genetic enhancements, they gained the ability to shapeshift. They had enhanced senses. They could survive extreme environments that would kill humans or most other humanoid species. They were able to climb walls like spiders. I assume that Spider-Man was probably a really very, very popular comic and cartoon series and later film franchise on the Suliban homeworld. And you might think, well, their homeworld was rendered inhabitable in the 1850s. How would they know about Spider-Man? But, you know, they're receiving all this stuff from the future, so...
Well, exactly. I mean,
easily get it. They even have the 4K edition of all the Spider-Man movies. So they also gain the ability to slide under doors. And, you know, that would come in handy.
Particularly if you've lost your keys.
Exactly. Exactly. They also gained other technology, like these sail ships that had tractor beams and cloaking devices. They had those stealth cruisers, which came in handy when they tried to frame the Enterprise crew. And they had those big space stations where they could assemble the cell ships together, like hundreds of these ships, and they assembled them together. And they could house thousands of Suliban individuals on those. I mean, these were all things that were quite far advanced over human technology, even though the Suliban as a race were really not any more advanced than humans. So it was very tempting for them to help, and they really received a lot of stuff there. But as we talk about them being terrorists, we talk about the Suliban cabal being a terrorist organization. That's how it's portrayed, even though we really see them more as pawns. And I feel like in Enterprise, we've talked about this, you know, off the air, that it feels a little bit like a one-sided story. Doesn't it? Like we're not really learning about the Suliban. We're learning about this really small sect that is carrying out terrorist activity on behalf of Future Guy.
That's right. And as I mentioned, we could have learned so much more about the Suliban as a race, but we also probably could have learned more about the Suliban cabal and their own backstory beyond just being pawns being manipulated by Future Guy. But certainly there's an episode of Enterprise called Detained where we're exposed to other members of the Suliban race when Archer...
Oh, yes. Detained is a good episode. That's where Al questions Sam about all... Wait a minute. No. No, it's not Al. It's Gat who questions Archer about Saren and everything else that's going on. Sorry, I got my quantum leap in a place. You know, I mean, Dean Anderson was there, Scott Bakula was there.
I remember seeing a large supply of paper clips as well.
But yeah, Detained is a good episode. That's the thing. Like I was saying earlier, like there's some intrigue there. Detained is an episode which lets us know that there is more to the Suliban than just these little tidbits that we've been getting about the Cabal and their role in the Temporal Cold War.
Although we learned a little bit more about the backstory of the Suliban through that episode Detained, but it wasn't really expanded upon at any point later in the show.
That's the thing,
ultimately, it seemed to me, and you may be able to comment more on this, having, you know, being a Native American, It felt like a real commentary on the war on terror and the backlash against the Muslim community.
Detained?
Yes.
Oh, no. Detained was an extremely transparent story about the internment of Japanese during World War II in the US.
Oh, I see. From my perspective, as I mean, you're obviously Japanese or live in Japan as well, so the American history around that is probably, you'd probably know a lot more about that than I do. But as an outsider, I could see those same themes applying to a public reaction to any terrorist group as well.
Yeah. Well, I think you're right. I mean, you could parallel it. You could update it. I guess because of my age, I associated immediately with what happened in World War II. And of course, because I am, you know, essentially Japanese, I lived my whole adult life in Japan. But if you look something like Guantanamo Bay, yeah, I mean, you can see similarities here in reactions. Because as you say, the Tendarans are viewing the Suliban as terrorists. And so they are detaining them, hence the name of the episode. So yeah, exactly. It works for that just as well as it does for the World War II analogy.
And we've seen similar things in some ways in Australia, where those in positions of authority claim to be doing certain things, which are actually taking away the rights of other groups under the guise of protecting them. And so I saw some of those parallels as well. And that's, I think, makes it quite an interesting episode that you can look at it from quite a number of perspectives.
It's a good point. I'm glad you brought it up, because next time I watch it, I'm going to watch it with that different angle. And I may feel differently about the writing if I, you know, maybe it is a little bit more nuanced than I've given it credit for in the past. So that's a good point. But that's a really good episode. And I wish they had followed through a little bit more on what they were setting up there. They follow through a little bit. Yeah, but there are some threads. Mm. And this is that little bit of continuity that you do get in Enterprise that you never got in Voyager. It's, you know, the continuity in Enterprise is not quite on the DS9 level. Yeah. But it is there, and I just mentioned 2 days and two nights earlier, and there is follow-through from Detained. You know, there are references back to that that follow through there, and that's quite nice, and it gave me hope that it was going somewhere else, but of course it didn't really go where I wanted it to, and that really leads us to what we'll close with here, which is just how the Suliban story was wrapped up, and what would we have liked to have seen. You know, the Suliban story really never got wrapped up. The temporal Cold War came to an end. Silic, spoiler, and I guess we should point out the format of Warp 5 here. So far, we haven't given away too much. We are talking about the series in broad strokes. You know, we're not going through episode by episode, so we are going to reveal plot points from later in the series. You know, as the temporal Cold War wraps up on Earth in 1944, Silic dies, and that's kind of the end of the Suliban as well. And it really fizzled out, you know? It's almost like Kirk's death in Generations, you know? It just left you like, that's it? Nothing more? Yeah. What would you have liked to have seen in terms of the Suliban and wrapping them up?
And I guess I'll start by saying I felt it was very rushed, and yes, it did fizzle out. It's been said, I think it was on the commentary on the Blu-ray for the pilot, that they had a sense that the series was going to be coming to an end, and Manny Kodo wanted to go in this new direction, and so yes, they did wrap it up very quickly. But I think it's more than just fizzling out. I don't know that it ever really got a foothold in the show. As we moved through the series, we still had this temporal Cold War storyline going throughout it, but it became, you know, the Zindi kind of got involved, and the Suliban just disappeared.
And the sphere
the
builders got involved.
Yes. Yeah, that's
as
right.
Well.
And we had the Crewman Daniels stuff happening, and the Suliban just seemed to fade away into the distance completely, and seemed much less of a party or any kind of threat in that Cold War.
Right. So when Silic stows away on the Enterprise, when Daniel sends the Enterprise back to 1944, it almost felt like, oh yeah, we have those Suliban guys.
Yeah.
Let's send Silic back so that he can be part of this, of wrapping this up, didn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. And it was they just had lost their power and their sense of threat by that stage. So I guess I would have, to me, it's not just in the way it was wrapped up, that it was already kind of a lost cause by that stage from my perspective. Yeah. As I've said, I would like to have learnt more, if not about the Suliban as a whole, but about the actual backstory of the Suliban cabal, and something that I could have connected to on a more emotional level with them, to maybe look at the complexities of their motivations in looking for these enhancements and this technology. That's something that I think would have made it a richer storyline.
It would have been interesting. And maybe that's, you know, when Brannon talks about how the Temporal Cold War was really an idea he had for another series that just kind of got adapted to Enterprise. Maybe if that had been its own series, those could have been the kinds of storylines that we could have gotten, and we could have, you know, explored the motivations behind this race. And
if I think that storyline had been given its own, I mean, it's a great idea. It's a very creative idea.
Right.
Yeah. But it wasn't allowed to stand on its own. There were other objectives for the show. And as we've said, I don't think that the heart of the writers was really in it in this context. It wasn't in their original design. That's not to say it wasn't a good idea, or that they did a... I wouldn't go so far as to say that the writers did a poor job in executing it. I think there were just cross purposes with the show.
I think you're right, yeah. So my final thought on the Suliban is that, as you just said, I think it was an interesting idea. I think there was a lot of potential to go somewhere with that story. But I do feel like it was creatively at odds with what they really wanted to do with the series. And so, yeah, I mean, saying maybe their hearts weren't really in it might be the case, as you just said. I think that might be the case. So I will never know what could have been done with the Suliban, because, you know, unless we get that fifth season on Enterprise, but of course the Suliban aren't going to be part of that because they're gone at that point.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Good effort to create an interesting alien race to be a thorn in the side of Archer and his crew. Didn't quite work out fitting it into the fabric of the show, but there are certainly good moments involving the Suliban, and there are very memorable moments from the show that wouldn't exist without Silic and without the Suliban. So yeah, I'm just kind of so-so on the Suliban, I suppose.
Yeah, and I don't want to be too harsh on them, but I know that there are some viewers of Enterprise that feel there are elements that are lackluster or not quite coherent, and I suspect the Suliban is a part of that. It is for me at times.
Could be. Yeah. Well, it's been fun talking about the Suliban, Kate, but this is just one of the Trek topics that we've been talking about on Trek FM this week. So let's give everyone a quick look at what you may have missed elsewhere on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, the Orb.
In the pale moonlight.
It's really probably the most fantastic thing, because
yeah,
everyone can do it. I mean, if you haven't seen Star Trek, you've seen that meme, you know, rolling around. It's a fake!
The Ready Room.
Spock's brain.
Oh, you've, sure. Yeah.
You've spent time of your life trying to keep the show on the air, and you're rewarded with... He's worse than dead. Come on, Bones, what's the mystery? His brain is gone!
Decade.
Star Trek Online.
The long-awaited and anticipated Tribble Test Reward, which to many people's shock and amusement and surprise was actually a Tribble!
To the journey!
Neelix.
This guy's like the Fred Sanford of space.
Yeah, exactly.
That's exactly what I thought.
Exactly.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
Someone is bleeding.
There's the whole thing where she's like, I've never met a man like you. And then, you know, she like turns on a dime and does all this stuff. And then, we'll get into that later. But
Trek news and views.
Voyager Season 7.
This is the thing. I know the Doctor is created in the image of Zimmerman, and Zimmerman's bold and blah, blah, blah. But surely to God, if you was creating an alter ego of yourself, you would give yourself hair.
Literary Treks.
Stellar cartography.
The big thing about the Dominion was they kept talking about how Vulcan and Earth and all the Federation homeworlds were threatened. Well, if you look at the map layout, if they're going to be threatened, that means the Dominion was right on their doorstep.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out these shows and get your daily Trek Talk, because we have a new show on some topic coming out every day. So, Kate, as I said, it's been very interesting talking about the Suliban, and you actually made me think about them in a different way, really, than I have. And I've seen the series through quite a few times, and especially Detained. I'm going to have to go back this week. I'm going to have to watch Detained and watch it with new eyes. Kate, you may have noticed this week in the U.S. iTunes store that we got a lot of attention from Apple, and I was really pleased to see that. We ended up in the new and noteworthy section on the front page of the podcasts area, but we did a little bit more than that, didn't we?
We did. We also reached the number 3 spot on the top podcast lists for TV and film. So, yeah, we'd like to send a huge thank you to everyone for listening and helping us, you know, have such great success right out of the space dock.
Yeah, I was surprised that we climbed that high with a show about Enterprise. But of course, we had great guests on the first two shows. So big thank you to Dave Rossi, and big thank you to Brendan Braga for joining us. And we are really glad everyone enjoyed those shows and hope you enjoy sticking around with us to talk more about Enterprise. We'd also like to thank Philip for some very extensive feedback on our last show about Captain Archer. It's there on our site. Philip gave us a lot of great points about Archer. It's quite lengthy. If you'd like to read it, you can go to the show page for that show, which is trek.fm/WF3, and see Philip's notes. And we'd also like to thank JamieFriend12, who left us a 5-star written review in the UK iTunes store. And also, we'd like to thank everyone who has left us 5-star ratings in the iTunes stores in various countries.
Chris, I'd also just like to thank everyone that has given us feedback over the last few weeks via Twitter. We've had some really positive feedback, some great discussions with people about the show, in particular some of the points that we raised last week about Captain Archer. And it's great to receive that kind of encouragement and to know that people are enjoying the show and that the things that we've discussed over the last few weeks are enriching people's experience of Enterprise. So thank you for that.
Absolutely. And that reminds me to tell everyone where to find us if you want to share your thoughts. So, of course, as Kate just mentioned, you'll find us on Twitter. Our username on there is TrekFM. You'll also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/TrekFM. And if you'd like to send us an email, you can go to our website. There's a form at trek.fm/contact. You can choose to send to a show and choose Warp 5, and that'll come to Kate and me both by email. And if you'd like to send us a voicemail, you can go to any page on the website, look along the right-hand side. You'll see a tab that says Send Voicemail. Just click that, a box will pop up. You can record a message using your webcam's mic and upload it to us as an MP3 file right there from the box. Now, Kate, we gave everyone the Trek FM account on Twitter. What about you? What if people want to find you personally?
If people want to find me personally, you can find me on Twitter as well. My handle is at KateIsGreatOK. And if you want to follow me, if you follow the show, just send me an at reply and I'll follow you back.
Excellent. And if you'd like to find me, my username is C Brian Jones. That's the letter C and Brian with a Y. And you can find me pretty much everywhere in social media under that username. You'll also find me elsewhere on the network every week. on The Orb with Matthew Rushing, where we talk Deep Space Nine, on Literary Treks, also with Matthew, where we talk Star Trek books and comics. You'll find me on The Ready Room as well, where we talk about all five of the live-action series, as well as the movies, with a very diverse panel of guests that changes every week, so come check us out over there. And before we go, we'd like to ask everyone to please support our sponsors for today's show. It's very important to us that you support our sponsors. It helps us bring this programming to you every week. And the first sponsor is Squarespace, which is the web's best hosting and CMS that makes it simple for you to create a beautiful blog, website, portfolio, online store, or really anything you can imagine. I use Squarespace myself. I have for about 6 years. I absolutely love it. And I'd love for you to create your own space today as well. I promise you're going to love it. Just go to squarespace.com for your free 14-day trial and then use offer code TREK7 to save 10% on your lifetime purchase on new accounts. Also, please visit trekfan.org. It's an amazing chance for you to come together with fans to do more than just talk about Star Trek. Now, Kate, I love to talk about Star Trek. I think you love to talk about Star Trek as well, don't you?
Yeah, you can't shut me up about Star Trek.
That's why you're on the Star Trek podcast. But, you know, we can sit around and talk about Star Trek all we want to, but we're never really going to get to that Star Trek future by just doing that. We need to be more active. And that's why you need to go to trekfan.org, because there you can collaborate with other fans to solve puzzles and complete real life mission objectives. It's a great way to learn. It's a great way to help us move towards the Star Trek future. You can turn your love for Star Trek into something that can help us get there to Archer's time and beyond. So support us and support TrekFan by visiting trekfan.org. Solve that first puzzle and take your next step on your adventure. And lastly, if you would personally like to support the network and our programming, visit trek.fm/donate. We have 8 new alien-themed badges as a thank you for your contribution, and they're perfect for your shirt, your bag, or even your Starfleet blue undies for you Enterprise fans. They're 44mm badges with original illustration by Tobu Ushi, who does most of the art that you see on our website. Those are at trek.fm/donate, and your donations help us cover the costs of production, storage, and bandwidth that's needed to bring this programming to you every week.
So thanks everyone for listening. Join us again next week here in the Decon Chamber for yet another episode of Warp 5.